Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any absolute appeal to authority. Our guest today is Abeba Brihani. Abeba is an Ethiopian cognitive science PhD student presently living in Dublin. She blogs regularly at abebabrihani.wordpress.com on topics including philosophy, psychology, feminism and anthropology. She recently drew quite a bit of attention on the internet with an article for Aeon entitled "Descartes Was Wrong, A Person is a Person Through Other Persons." And this will be the topic of our discussion today. Hello, Abeba. Welcome to the Middle Way Society podcast.
Hello, Barry. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, well, could you begin, Abeba, by telling us maybe a bit about yourself and how you became interested in this topic?
As you said in your introduction, I am originally in Ethiopia. I was born and grew up there, and I moved to Ireland, and I am doing a cognitive science PhD. The article is about emphasizing that we are essentially social beings. Our sense of self is formed and sustained through our interactions with others. The idea is that in the West, especially in Western Europe, Descartes' philosophy, Descartes' metaphysics, that underpins "I think, therefore I am" has been very influential and implicitly influencing, and still remains central in how we do science and how we think about ourselves, how we philosophize. It has remained prevalent now. And my idea in the article is that that has been misleading, and that has problems in its own, because that "I think, therefore I am" approach views the person as something rational, something that is autonomous, that is, you know, self-sustaining, and it portrays reason at the center as the most important human faculty. That assumption ignores the fact that we are emotional beings, we are embodied, and that we are constantly interacting with others, and that the world is much more messier and complex and always in a dynamic flux, which the Cartesian assumption sidelines and ignores.
Okay, so would you say that dichotomy that the Cartesian view sort of exemplifies, you know, the separation between the mind and the body, has also created other dichotomies such as you say, reason and emotion, facts and values, etc.? Do you think they all stem from that Cartesian view?
Yeah, in a way they do. I think the main idea for Descartes, and this is not just purely Descartes, even though he is the main landmark in this, has been to kind of find a solid ground to build reason and knowledge on, and to find stability and to pin down knowledge and the idea of personhood in something that's unshakable. And as nice and as great as that sounds, that doesn't really reflect reality, because we are in a constant flux, in a constant change, co-evolving with others and changing as we interact with others. We are not really fixed, constant, always rational beings. And that view of the, you know, personhood and knowledge is more true to reality, I think, than what Descartes and the Cartesian view was attempting to do.
Yeah, I don't know whether you've come across the work of Antonio Damasio and his book, for example, Descartes' Error.
Yes.
I mean, I found that fascinating. That, correct me if I'm wrong, but one thing that particularly came to mind, he conducted some studies on people where the emotional parts of their brain had been knocked out either by lesion or stroke or whatever. And these people just lived very chaotic, random lives because they didn't know what to want or they couldn't set goals. For example, if they were in a supermarket and there were two types of tomato, they could actually use their reasoning capacities to distinguish between the two types, but they couldn't make the decision which one they wanted, and it was very awful for them.
Yeah, exactly. It just shows you that reason and emotions are not, at opposite ends, but rather our emotions helps us frame and they direct us to good decision makings. So in Damasio's views, good decision making cannot be done without emotions. Emotions are what helps us narrow down from, the infinite choices that are out there. And we do need emotions in order to make good decisions. But if you go along with Descartes' logic, then you have to rule out emotions in order to make reasoned and logical good decisions. And that's just another problem with Descartes' approach.
Sometimes, do you think you can see this in politics today? Like, there's still that Cartesian view that can just appeal to people's reason and then everything will be fine. Conservatives, apparently, they have understood in many ways that if you use more weighted emotional arguments, then reason is not necessary. I'm thinking of what happened in Brexit in the UK and particularly the Trump campaign. Whether you like Trump or not, they seem to be more adept at avoiding that Cartesian trap.
I must admit my knowledge and awareness of European politics is not excellent. What just came to my mind is how the abortion debate is framed currently here in Ireland, where I live. And as an outsider, I feel there is still some sort of Cartesian materialism or Cartesian thinking in how the abortion debates are conducted here. I know abortion is not strictly political here, but you see very rigid and inflexible view towards the fetus. People are very emotionally involved, and I think, in my view, part of the reason why people treat the fetus as a human being, as something that's deserving of a full human right, in a way stems from some sort of Cartesian view that a person or a fetus is just a person, regardless of its development, regardless of its interaction and its progress with others. Whereas if you compare that, say, to the Ubuntu philosophy or the view that many would share in my own home country, Ethiopia, you don't see that because the view there is a fetus or even a baby is something that should be granted full personhood as it develops, as it progresses through interacting with others. So it may not be explicit immediately, but when you dig a bit deeper, you see that Cartesian influence in a lot of everyday debates.
Maybe we've now moved into the area of the main premise of your article that a person is a person through other persons. So could you maybe just expand a little bit more on how the view of personhood is understood in Ubuntu philosophy?
Yeah, so for Ubuntu philosophy, a person is a person through other persons. If you want, you can take that as similar to no man is an island. We learn to think, we learn to walk, we learn to communicate with others, we learn to be human through others. And essentially, that is the core of Ubuntu philosophy. We are not an entity that's discrete and independent of others, but beings that are embedded in a web of relations with others. And for Ubuntu philosophy, those relations are fundamental, and those relationships are much more important than the discrete independent individual itself. And Ubuntu is more than just a philosophy, it's a way of life. It's a culture, it's a kind of religion, it's a way for communities to connect and to look out for each other, to take responsibility for each other.
I suppose you're in a unique position, Abeba, having come from that particular culture where arguably there is a far less individualistic way of perceiving the world, to coming to the West. How has that experience been? How has that affected you and your view of personhood?
It's been very interesting. I've been here a while, and every time, every day, through my interaction, I'm discovering, you know, subtle differences as well as similarities. And it's not obvious immediately. And not only does it surprise me, it also surprises others as I communicate and kind of discuss what I have noticed. Say, if you take the example of looking after kids or child rearing.
Yeah.
Whereas for Ethiopians, certainly, and most of Africa, while that responsibility or while that duty is assigned more or less as a community responsibility, so if you see someone's child misbehaving or doing something inappropriate or in trouble on the middle of a road or somewhere near the neighborhood, people back home in Ethiopia, the norm would be that they are responsible, they are obliged to do what's appropriate, help that child if she or he is in trouble, or discipline that child as necessary if they are doing something inappropriate. Whereas here, you notice the individualist culture, people are inclined to leave that issue as not something that's their business. People are more inclined to give others or others' children some privacy, and people are less inclined to get involved in what they might consider as not their business.
Yeah, I suppose another aspect I'm thinking of that maybe is different between our cultures is I've often heard that in Africa there's a surprise verging on shock when they hear how the degree to which older people end up in old people's homes, and I'm not saying this is always the case, often the connection between the children and that elderly person is quite limited at times in the West. That's very unusual from an African perspective.
Yeah, well, as you know, Africa is a huge continent with over 54 countries, and,
sure,
and
yeah,
the norms vary. But from my experience, that would come, as you said, as a shock to many people, because according to Ubuntu philosophy, elder people are who provide wisdom and wise words to the younger society, as the young is responsible to look after the old and to respect the elder. The elder are also responsible in sharing their own wisdoms. And the older someone gets, the more respected they are and the more they are viewed as more experienced, whose words are valued more than the young and who are a treasure. So yes, there is certainly a difference in how we view the old.
Can you also see potentially though many people in the West, especially many women, often led quite restricted lives because it was considered their duty to stay and look after the parents, and often they didn't get the opportunity to flourish, certainly to the same extent that their brothers may have had.
Yeah, I'm not sure what kind of comparisons could be drawn from that. I myself consider myself as a radical feminist, and in a way, that's where I put my critical hat on, even when it comes to even the Ubuntu philosophy, because it's very strongly male dominant and hierarchical, where there are well-defined and categorized duties and responsibilities for women and men. And that aspect I am a critical of and I don't fully endorse. So in that respect, from my personal point of view, I don't think either the Western philosophy or the Ubuntu way of life are that great in terms of women's rights.
Okay, and you've become interested in Black feminist epistemology, and that in some way there might be a middle way there where you can sort of unite this idea of personhood with the idea of equality?
Yes, I think where the Ubuntu philosophy might become useful in terms of Black feminist philosophy is its emphasis on interconnectedness and its emphasis on dialogues, because for many Black feminist epistemologists, the Western view of science, or as they would call it, the positivist underpinning of most science, human sciences for sure anyway, is Western masculinist and mainly white male dominant. And because of that, the knowledge produced from that paradigm reflects the interests and values of mainly white Western women, and Black women's experiences are in a way left out, and the sciences don't reflect Black women's experiences and Black women's values.
Yeah.
So a lot of Black feminists have proposed a distinct, separate epistemology or a way of producing knowledge and a way of validating knowledge that would reflect Black women's experiences in the world and Black women's values. And in their endeavor to their this epistemology that accounts for Black women, what they propose is a dialogical view that takes account of dialogues and Black women's way of life as they live in their community, and an epistemology and a way of producing knowledge that reflects that. And that's where the dialogical view from the Bakhtinian approach or from the Ubuntu philosophy could come in handy and support this Black feminist epistemology, this Black feminist view.
And also the dialogical approach you mentioned in your article, it can also be a way of reconciling these two accounts of the self, the Cartesian one, and the more social-centered view. Could you maybe expand on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. The dialogical view, in a sense, originates from this Soviet philosopher, Mikhail Bakhtin, and his proposal was that relationships we have with others are much more essential and fundamental and worthy of study rather than the individual units themselves, and that in order to develop coherent and full sense of self, we need others. For example, my interaction with you and your view of my own self will inform me and will help me in terms of completing and making sense of my own self, and we essentially need others in order to have any sense of self. If you want an example, which was also mentioned in the Aeon article, is that it's the solitary confinement, where originally the idea was that if you put prisoners in solitary confinements, all just by themselves, those prisoners will reflect on their crimes and they will think about what they did and they would hate their crimes and they would come out cleansed and moral, and, you know, they will be good citizens and they would go back to society. And this has a very deep Cartesian view that the self is just discrete and self-sustaining and, you know, existing on its own. But as this study by Sean Gallagher's 2014 study shows, prisoners in solitary confinements actually lose themselves completely instead of reflecting and thinking about their crimes. They suffer in delusions, they lose their sense of time, and they run into a lot of physical and psychological problems. And it's because they need another view, they need an external interaction, an external person in order to keep their own sense of self maintained. And that's where the Bakhtinian view of dialogism and the fundamental need for relationships and interactions with others comes in.
That just makes so much sense about it. There was a quote in the article that just sort of sums that up. I am because we are, since we are, therefore I am.
Exactly, yeah. That pretty much stands against Descartes' proposal that I think, therefore I am. That I am because we are, and since we are, therefore I am, really fundamentally shows or argues that we are first and foremost social beings. Before we become an individual, we are social, and we learn to be human, to have a sense of self through others.
Yeah, okay. The middle way, as we understand it, is the idea that we make better judgments by avoiding fixed or dogmatic beliefs about things, whether those are positive or negative. That then throws us back on experience, so we're left in this sort of messy, uncertain middle. But it's arguably, from our position, in the messy, uncertain middle that we can actually start to get to grips more adequately with the phenomena that we encounter. Now, how might that tie in with the ideas we've been discussing?
Yeah, I think it fits in perfectly. And as you said it, this fixed dogmatic view is what my article has been trying to argue for and what my research is trying to do, which I closely associate with, the Cartesian metaphysics, where the person or even the idea of knowledge is seen as something that could be fixed, that could be certain, whereas the middle way view, as you described it, would fit in with my own view that we are continually changing, we are continually in the process of moving, we are always in flux, we are relational, co-evolving with others, and that reality is complex and messy, and it's by adopting these flexible and processual approaches, I think, that we remain true to reality.
Great. Okay, well, thank you very much for talking to me today, Aveva. It's been really fascinating and a real pleasure.
Thank you very much, and it's been great as well.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.